scriptures that we studied in the last week or so was Isaac and Rebekah, and now we introduce Jacob and Esau. We'll review that just in a moment, and then we're going to add a few characters as Jacob is fleeing, adding his future wives of Leah and Rachel to the story today, plus their handmaids. But just going over just a little bit from last week. When the story started last week, Isaac was 40 years old. Rebecca is barren. She has children about 20 years after they're married. So then Isaac would be 60 when Jacob and Esau were born. It makes Abraham about 160 in the story when Jacob and Esau were born. And he's going to live to be 175, which will make them about 15-year-old teenagers when he passes away. We got into the story in chapter 25, talking about the two children in the womb of Rebekah. God said that is two nations that are in your womb. One will be stronger and the older will serve the younger. Famous part when we're studying this and when we're in the children's class is about Esau being very hairy. He's born first. Jacob means supplanter. And it talks about describing him grabbing the heel of his brother when he is born, and that plays out throughout their lives. Esau is a skillful hunter. Isaac loves him because of that. He loves the game that he catches and eating the game that he catches, so he shows a little bit of favoritism towards Esau. And then Jacob's described as being a mild man dwelling in tent. He'll become a shepherd. Rebekah loves him more than Esau. So again, this favoritism plays out. And I guess just a note that parents ought to be careful about that. And you can see that causes some issues in this story as well, showing favoritism of one child over the other. Then we get into the story about Esau despising his birthright. He comes in from hunting all tired and weary. Jacob was cooking a stew. It was like a red stew. And it says there, that Edom means red, and that he was called that at this time. Made a note about Jacob didn't really show kindness in this right here. He kind of comes up with a scheme right here, which is a flaw in character that he did right there. But Esau, at the same point as described in the Bible, wasn't any better because he foolishly gives away his birthright that Jacob demands from him just over a bowl of stew. So it's described as him despising his birthright. Wayne gave this chart on being profane in there, and how in Hebrews 12 that it talks about in verse 16, lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau. So the Bible's describing him as a profane person because he, for one morsel of food, sold his birthright. We had the repeating of the promises that were given to Abraham, given to Isaac in chapter 26. That's land, nation, and seed promise. And made the point here that God did this, and he told them that he was given this because of Abraham obeyed. So this is going on to the descendants, but this is the original promise that's given to Abraham, and Abraham obeyed by faith. We had this strange reoccurrence of Isaac going to Abimelech, in this area of Gerar, and here very similar to what happened with Abraham at two different times, one with the Pharaoh in Egypt and then also in Gerar himself. But Isaac, because of his wife's beautiful, is acting like it's his sister, and it causes all sorts of problems. And Abimelech tells Isaac, you would have brought guilt upon us by allowing this. You know, he sees him out there, out a window. It describes as treating Rebecca as a wife and not as a sister. It was obvious to him that they were actually married and not brother and sister. So he gets on to him about that. And then it describes Abimelech telling nobody to touch her. Isaac begins to prosper greatly. You know, he's already going to have the blessings from his father, but he's being blessed greatly as well, as it describes in that chapter. He's prospered so greatly that the Philistines envied him for that, and they want him out of there. They said, you're mightier than we, so we want you to get out of here. You had this story about them redigging the wells. Abraham had these wells dug, and the Philistines, I guess, had them all filled back up, and Isaac goes and he's redigging. As he moves out of Gerar, he's redigging these wells, and as he's redigging them, he starts to have conflict with the men of Gerar over there, and so he's having these quarrels, and eventually he moves far enough away when he digs one that they don't quarrel about it, so he calls that place Rehoboth, which the Lord has made room for us is what that means. So then we get into a covenant being made here between Abimelech and Isaac, and you have the official, I guess, naming of Beersheba there, which means well of oath, the well of the oath there. It talked about Esau marrying at 40 years old, that he took some wives from Canaan, Judith and Basemath, and that these ladies caused grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Then we get into talking about Isaac as getting old, at least in his own mind. He was getting up there in age, but he sees himself as being old. He can't really see anymore. He sends Esau to hunt game. Then just made the note here that he's about 137 years old, but he's going to live about 43 years old. But the part of the story here is he describes it as he thinks he could die, you know, very soon. But he does make it 43 more years, but he doesn't know that. But, you know, he sends Esau out to catch him some game and to cook for him, and he wants to give him the blessing. Rebekah overhears that plan. Then we discuss quite a bit that goes through there, the story of deceit that happens and how they end up putting coats of hairy skin from the goats on his hands and his neck, on Jacob's hands and neck. And he lies several times to Isaac, saying that he is Esau, and all that story goes through there right here, and this, and he ends up getting the blessing through deceit of his father. You got Esau returning from there and thinking he's coming in to get the blessing and stuff, and he's told that the blessing's already been given, and he greatly weeps. So, you know, he is very upset that all this happens, and Isaac comes back when he's asking, you know, well, can I not get a blessing? And Isaac comes back and pretty much doesn't give him very good news. The blessing had been given away. And he says that, you know, you'll dwell away from the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven, and you would live by the sword and serve your brother. Okay, because of this right here, Esau hates Jacob and he threatens to kill him. And we'll be getting more to that story a little bit later. But Wayne made the point, we need to remember this because it's going to come back, because they are going to come back together. Rebekah learns of this plan and tells Jacob that she needs to go to her brother Laban to escape the wrath of his brother. Then after this, Isaac tells Jacob that he should not take a wife like his brother did from there, that he needs to go to Padan Aram, which sets up our story this morning, and take a wife from there, from the daughters of Laban. And just a note that, you know, in our minds we may see them as about 20, although people live longer at this time. Jacob and Esau are actually 77 at this time. And so now we get to the narrative to be talking about Jacob specifically. And then Esau, because of how he sees his parents reacted to his wives and what they're telling Jacob to go do, he ends up marrying again and taking a wife from the daughter of Ishmael right there. So that's all from last week. So let's get going on what we have today and try to quickly move through some of this. If you want to follow along, Genesis 28, starting in verse 10. It says there, "Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head. And he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven, and there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Verse 13, "And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land of which you lie I will give you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and the south. And in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you." Verse 16, then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Then Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So that kind of sets up our story this morning. So because Esau wants to kill him, you have him fleeing him. And he's trying to get to Laban's family. It's about 500 miles away, but he stops along the way at Luz, and he ends up, as we just read at the end there, he ends up naming it Bethel, which is about 50 or 60 miles from where he took off from there. So just kind of looking at the map here, where is he trying to get to? He's going from like what's at the bottom of this map, trying to get all the way up there to Haran, which is about 500 miles away. And this map here shows where he had this dream about the ladder at Luz, which becomes Bethel, going from Beersheba to Luz. And again, that was about 50 or so miles of travel on foot. Remember, he's fleeing. That's part of this story. I'll try to bring that out and remind us that a few times. But remember to where Isaac took had all those, had the... you had the servants taking all these gifts and stuff to go get Rebekah. In this story, you have when he's going to get a daughter from Laban's family, he's not coming with pretty much anything. He doesn't have gifts or all that to give. And it kind of plays into the story of him not being there just for a few days, but much longer. Okay, so he had that dream of the ladder reaching into heaven. You know, it's not a staircase is a point that we need to talk about there, because a lot of times that's shown in that way of having this elaborate. I mean, the scriptures tell us that's a ladder right there. The important thing and what I thought about here is it talking about angels ascending and descending. It made me think back to they're at a time right here where angels are visiting men. We just had those stories as we were studying recently about Sodom and Gomorrah, but this relationship with God and man and this connectivity right here, I think, is kind of the main point here. But it is a dream, but it's not just a dream without a point. God speaks to him in the dream. So it's one of these visions where he is being given instruction in this dream. Just going over a few of the things that we discussed there. God appears above the ladder down in about verse 13 that we read and speaks to him, and he repeats these promises that had already been given to Abraham and these promises that had been given to Isaac. Now they're being given to Jacob, and that was described down in verses 13 through 15. And there's also a personal blessing here that's going to come to fruition as well here down in verse 15, where God says, behold, I am with you wherever you go. That's going to be important, because a lot of the story today is going to be about his prosperity that is there. So God is with him on a personal basis as well. In verse 15, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. Also important that we got to remember that, going to bring you back to this land. He's not to go over there to Laban's family and take root there. He's to come back to the land of promise. Okay, so he awakes from his sleep. Got it. Kind of an important point right there in verse 17, how he describes how awesome is this place. Once he has this dream and he gets it, you know, God is talking to me at this place right here. It's like, how awesome. And so that's something that we throw around. Wayne had, when he was teaching the younger class, had made a lot of, spent a little bit more time than I will on this right here. But that is a term that's overused a lot by us today. We use that in a lot of weird ways. But if you go back and read in this story right here, this is like a word that is reserved to describe the awesomeness of God and being awestruck by being in the presence of God or talking with God and how awesome God is. But he sets up a pillar, calls the name of the place Bethel, which is house of God, down there in verse 18 and 19. And he makes a vow there that the Lord will be his God in verse 21. And also that he would give a tenth of all that he accumulated back to God. If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going, give me bread to eat and clothing to put on and come back to my father's house, I will serve God. That's the point he's making there. So he moves on from there as we get into chapter 29, getting to where he's supposed to be going, which is to the family of Laban in the area of Haran in chapter 29. Any comments or questions on chapter 28 or anything that we've got up to this point? Okay, let's keep going in chapter 29. If you're following along with me there, that's where we are now. So Jacob arrives at a well in Padan Aram. He is 77 at this time, fleeing Esau, coming empty-handed pretty much. He has this conversation with some men when he comes upon the well where he's trying to find out, am I in the right place? Am I close there? So he asks pretty much, do you know Laban? Do you know if he is well? That's down in verses 4 through 6. The men say his daughter Rachel's right over there coming this way with the sheep down there in verse 6. She arrives to them. It looks like he's trying to kind of get them to move on and get their water so he can have the conversation with her first and all that right there. But it looks like the men that are there waiting kind of just blow off what he's saying, like, no, we're not going to do that. You know, it's not the right time to do that now. So he doesn't get them to move on to leave him there by himself when Rachel's approaching. So he pretty much, it happens in the way as we get down there in verse 9, he's still talking to them down in verse 9 when Rachel gets all the way there. And recall that this Rachel is one of the daughters of Laban, and this is Jacob's mother's brother. I'm talking about Laban. And verse 10, Jacob waters the flock for her. It's Laban's sheep that she's bringing down in there. And, you know, Jacob helps her and does all the watering of that flock for her. Then he kisses her and he weeps and tells her that he is her father's relative. So he kind of tells her down in verse 11, 12 who he is. And when he describes all that to her, she runs back home to Laban to say, I've met this man, and he's saying that he's a relative and all this. So she goes back with excitement there in verse 12. So Laban has a very warm welcome for him as well down in verse 13. He welcomes him, brings him back into his house in verse 13. And he says in verse 14, surely you are my bone and my flesh. So he's acknowledging maybe even by looks or whatever, but he's saying, you are my relative. You are welcome here in my home. So it says there that Jacob stayed with him about a month till we get to the next section right after 14, where they start entering these discussions about wages because he'd been there a month. I guess he was staying there for free, but he obviously had already started working and taking care of things for Laban, but he hadn't paid him anything yet. So we get into the next section here. So starting in chapter 29 and verse 15, then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Verse 19, and Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled. So we've jumped 7 years in these few verses. Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and Jacob goes in to her. Verse 24, and Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid also. All this will come into the story soon as well. Verse 25, so it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? There's a lot of deceit going on in a lot of these stories. Verse 26, and Laban said, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve me still another 7 years. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. So 7 years went by, and now he's going to serve seven more years. So let's kind of go over a few of those points there. Kind of the description of the daughters of Laban. Leah's older and her eyes were delicate, not as attractive to Jacob, whatever that means. Verse 17, also Rachel the younger is described as beautiful. Jacob offers to work 7 years for Rachel in verse 18, and it's described the time moving very quickly to him. It seems like just to him it was like no time passed at all, you know, but it goes by quickly. And then you get into the deception as he goes and says, I fulfilled my 7 years. And it looks like Laban is complying. Just when you're reading the verses right there, at first he's preparing a marriage feast. You know, he's going to give his daughter Rachel, you're thinking at this time. But it's Leah that's given. I don't know what we're not told right here, what the situations were. You know, was the tent dark when she was sent in there? Was her face veiled? You know, who knows, but surprise when he wakes up the next morning, it's not who he thought it was. So for whatever those reasons were and what he thinks he worked for that went quickly, that's not what takes place. It's actually the older that was given to him at this point of time right here. So Laban goes in and gives the excuse that he never gave in the previous 7 years, that you're actually going to have to take the older first, right? None of that's ever told. He works for 7 years, so it's absolute deceit right here. None of this stuff's ever told. You know, he tries to, you know, play it off as, you know, I have to give the older first, but none of that stuff was ever discussed. So as we're described right there, Jacob agrees to work seven more years now so that he can have Rachel. So we have Zilpah given as a maiden for Leah. Rachel is eventually given to Jacob after he fulfills that week. So it's been 7 years, and then a week after the marriage with Leah, he's given Rachel. Rachel has a maid, Bilhah, that's given to her. So you have two maids in the story and two sisters. But it says there in verse 30, Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. And Leah was unloved, you know, it describes right there. It's kind of sad as you're reading that story about her, but that's the way it's described there. She was unloved, and he loved Rachel. Because of this, God, seeing that she was unloved, God opens her womb, and Rachel's going to be barren for some time as we progress with the story. So to describe the next point, it's like a cold war, meaning cold, as in these sisters are going to act very strifeful with each other. It's just this is a major sort of battle and race to bear children for Jacob between them. So a lot of animosity happens here, and they have this kind of like arms race, but it's all about bearing children. And this is described from 29 verse 31 through 30 verse 23. Just have all these different children being born. So we'll go through a little bit about that right there. See if I have time for this. I think so. So Wayne had this commentary by Kaufman in here. And let's see what this man had to say. It kind of describes a little bit about the situation that we're going through right here. What happened to Jacob here was a mean and despicable a fraud as was ever perpetuated by one human being against another. One may only wonder if Jacob remembered the fraud that he and his mother had committed against Isaac. Remember, that was last week's story. Did the remembrance of it lead to his rather meek acceptance of what Laban did to him? You notice he didn't pitch a fit, or at least there's nothing recorded where he just absolutely goes off the next day. There's a short little accusation there, but then when Laban comes back and says what he says, it just seems like it's accepted and moved on. So is that part of him, you know, feeling his past coming back to haunt him? So this time the heel catcher, the meaning of the name Jacob, was himself taken by the heel by Laban. The deceiver was deceived. Laban also in turn would learn the solemn truth that as men sow, so shall they reap. We're going to get into that as well too. something else. It appears that for 7 years, Jacob had lived above the devices of fraud and deception. But in the action here, Laban aroused the passion in Jacob's heart to return to his old ways. And he would eventually find out that he had more than met his match in Jacob. That's going to be the end of the story here, where Jacob comes up with a scheme to kind of really excessively prosper through Laban. Laban might have been doing fairly well until he tricked Jacob. Within the span of 2 decades, Jacob would move out of Laban's territory, taking with him both of Laban's daughters as his wives and their children, who were doubtless dear to Laban, and the vast wealth which he had taken away from Laban. In this, Laban might have been able to read his just recompense of reward. So that's kind of setting up the story that we'll get to in just the next chapter. So in this area of Genesis 29, 31 through 35 here, you have Leah having 4 sons first. I put it there. That's kind of the layout. She's going to have more later, but right off in those verses right there describes her having 4 sons. So she has Reuben first, which means behold a son. And she says, surely the Lord has looked on my affliction. Now my husband will love me. Remember, she's unloved. So that's what she's thinking after she has a son. She's like, this is going to change. Obviously, it didn't. She has another son, calls his name Simeon, which is to be heard. And she says, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved. Keeps going forward. She has a third son named Levi, which means attached. My husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. So she keeps thinking, you know, Jacob is going to eventually love me because I'm producing him children right here. But, you know, she just keeps going and going, and it doesn't seem to be changing the situation. Then she has a 4th son named Judah, which means to praise. She says, I will praise the Lord here. It gets through pretty much chapter 29, but it says there, as we're in chapter 29, that she stopped bearing children at this time. She's going to have more children later, but we're going to see as the story changes, she stops bearing for a while. But she's produced 4 sons at this point. Any questions or comments on chapter 29? Okay, starting with chapter 30, we won't read as much in this chapter, but let's set the chapter up. Verse 1 of chapter 30. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. Verse 2. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. He said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? You know, pretty much, why are you blaming me? I don't have a role in this, you know, with you not being able to have children. Verse 3, so she said, here's my maid Bilhah, go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her. Then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her. So just bring up the point. Hopefully you're already thinking the same thing, but recall Sarai's plan that we had, you know, about a month ago that we studied, where she wants to produce an heir for Abram at the time. But produce an heir for Abraham by using Hagar, her maid. Well, Rachel does the same thing here. Instead of leaning on God, they decide, I'm going to do things my way, and I'm going to get what I want by this way right here. And so that's what Rachel does. So Bilhah, which is Rachel's maid, ends up producing 2 sons for Rachel and Jacob. First one, Dan, which means judge. Rachel said, God has judged my case and given me a son. And then also Naphtali. And this is kind of showing that Cold War that I was talking about, kind of the mindset that's going on with these sisters, Naphtali means my wrestling or my struggle. Rachel said, with great wrestlings, I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. If that doesn't kind of describe kind of what's going on here, I don't know that anything will, but it's kind of just this battle going on. That's what she sees. It's a battle against her sister to produce children. Okay, then you have Zilpah, which is Leah's maid. Again, chapter 29 ended saying she'd stopped bearing for a while. It looks like she didn't stop trying, but she didn't bear for a while. And so she ends up saying, if she's going to have children through this maid, well, I'm going to give my maid to Jacob, and we're going to have children through this maid. So 2 sons are produced for Leah and Jacob through Zilpah. And the first one was Gad, which means a troop comes. Also, it's described in other places being fortunate, but this troop comes seems to make the more sense in the story here. She says she is she didn't say this, but she is boasting that she is producing an army of children for Jacob. She had already produced 4 sons. Now through a maid, it's continuing here through her maid. She has more going to her account pretty much. And she has a 5th son here. So she's kind of boasting here. And then a second son through Zilpah, Asher, which means happy. Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." And so that will be the 6th kind of on the account of Leah here, sons that are born. All right, getting in, this is kind of a strange little occurrence, but we've had plenty of them in Genesis. But let's read this little excerpt from verses 14 through 16 about these mandrakes. And somebody can tell me if you've had a mandrake before. I've never had a mandrake, but let's read this real quick. "Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother, Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, 'Please give me some of your son's mandrakes.' But she said to her, 'Is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?' And Rachel said, 'Therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes.'" So verse 16, "When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, 'You must come into me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes.' And he lay with her that night." So it's like a little soap opera going on here in the background right here. But gave a little info on these mandrakes. So it's just like it produces like these yellow berries. It resembles little yellow apples. And it was said in the Waldron book, he put down the Bedouins used them as an aid to childbearing. So I just made the note. It may be something that's not really written about here, but why were they partaking of mandrakes and stuff? They might, this is speculation, but based on what's gathered here, they might have thought that that was going to aid them in childbearing by having these mandrakes or whatever. So it's kind of a strange part of the story where Jacob's kind of used as a pawn here by the sisters in their battle right here. But I don't know if Rachel wanted to have these mandrakes because she thought it was going to help her bear children or not. Don't know, but she ends up, allowing Jacob to be with Leah just to have some of this fruit-like stuff. So it's very strange. Down in verse 17 of chapter 30, God hears Leah, and we had talked about her not having children anymore. Well, she starts bearing children again through this situation that just happened right after the mandrakes right here. And it says that she has a son named Issachar, which means reward or hire. And she said, "God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband." And then she has another son, Zebulun, which means to dwell. And she says, "Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him 6 sons." So she's still of the mindset, the more children I have, he's going to love me. And it just never really seems to happen right here, or at least is what's recorded for us. And then she also has a daughter. I mean, they were producing male children like crazy, but Dinah's the only one described here down in verse 21 being a daughter that was born to them. So now you have Leah had 6 sons and a daughter. She also had 2 other sons through her maid, and you had Rachel having 2 sons through her maid at this point. Down in verse 22, "Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, 'God has taken away my reproach.' So she called his name Joseph and said, 'The Lord shall add me another son.'" So now Rachel actually had a son. She will have one later, but Joseph's name kind of means to add or increase. And then Benjamin's going to be born later. It's not part of this story right now, later when they head back to Canaan. I believe that's in chapter 35. "So therefore, 11 sons and 1 daughter are born in 7 years. If you remember, we described 7 years seemed like a few days to Jacob, but there was no children born in that time. After the 7 years, he thinks he's getting Rachel. He gets Leah, and then the arms race via the children between the sisters start at that point. He fulfills a week, and then within that week, he has 2 wives, the 2 sisters, and then you end up in the 7 years that we're getting into right now, the second 7 years, all of these children are born between 4 different women right here. So you have 11 sons and 1 daughter born in this time. So the point is there had been a lot of overlapping going on because the maids being mixed in as well in here. So I got a few slides just talking about what had been putting together for us to think about, you know, the unloved that God, you know, allowed to be very fruitful for Jacob, that she had preeminence or superiority over the sister as far as who she produced. So let's look at a few points here. She was the actual mother of six sons, half of the 12 patriarchs, and one daughter. Her son Judah succeeded to the headship of the chosen nation through whom the Messiah was born. Her posterity became the principal element in the true Israel, following the defection and loss of northern Israel. David the king, who gave his name and title to Christ himself, the son of David, was her descendant. And her son Judah gave his name and title to Christ, the lion of the tribe of Judah that we know very well. So just a lot of very important things in history that Christ came through Leah. She was buried by Jacob's side in the cave of Machpelah at Hebron. We'll get into in the next week, Rachel dying, but she's buried somewhere else. But she's buried, Leah's buried by Jacob's side in the cave of Machpelah, where Abraham and Sarah were buried. All right, so now we get to the kind of the end of the story today. Jacob wants to leave. He had been there for 14 years. Now remember, he's about 77, so now he's about 91 when he's trying to leave. That wouldn't be the same as a 91-year-old today, but nonetheless, you know, he's getting older. He's ready to take his family and return to the land promised to him by God as he was instructed to, so he's being faithful in that. That's described in verses 25 and 26 of chapter 30. Laban pleads with him to stay because Laban knows that he is being blessed because Jacob being there. He knows his prosperity is increasing because of Jacob. Wages are negotiated in verses 28 through 33, kind of a strange part of the story there, but Jacob gets the spotted and speckled sheep and goats. That's kind of the agreement that they made. He also gets the brown lambs, as described in verse 32. Laban is very excited to get the rest from what he thinks he's going to make out in this by letting Jacob have that. So he's very willing to agree with all that. So it says, Jacob's flocks are sent 3 days away with Laban's sons, and Jacob continues to take care of Laban's flocks. It describes in verses 35 and 36. So that kind of weird part of the story, we don't have a whole lot of time to go over, but if you read down in verses 37 through 42, this scheme where Jacob is trying to prosper and him get most of the flock to build, being the speckled ones and all that, he exposed the flocks to like mixed colored sticks. He talked about stripping the wood back to making the wood look striped and that. And there obviously was a belief back then if the animals conceived while looking at striped wood or striped things like this, that it would produce striped. So he's thinking by this scheme here that all the animals are going to be speckled and spotted and all this right here, and he's going to get them, and Laban won't. But really, and I just made a point down in here that, you know, there was a belief that this was the way things were done back then, that people actually thought that this was the way to make things happen. But we need to remember that it was God that was prospering, not a scheme that he came up with that he could do this to make it happen. God told him that he was going to bless him and make him prosper, and that's exactly what's God doing. So we don't really, or what God is doing, we don't really have any proof that this scheme that Jacob created here is really having the effect that he intends. The effect is happening, but it's more likely that God is prospering him because God's keeping his promises to him that he's going to help him be successful. So many speckled and spotted animals are born. Jacob keeps separating his flocks from those of Laban's. And so his flocks keep building up and his flocks are strong. Laban's are weaker. And he is just prospering like crazy through all this right here. So this is the Lord blessing Jacob as he promised. And in verse 43, thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. And this is what he accumulated in Haran, right? He still got, when he's going to return back, I mean, he's got all the great prosperity that he's going to be accumulating back home. He showed up empty-handed, but he's leaving with great prosperity to go back to be the heir of great prosperity. So he is really going to be flourishing here. So quickly, the faith and failings of the families that we normally talk about, and you may have a few others, but as far as the faith side, Jacob's vow to serve God right off the bat, Jacob's work ethic, how hard he worked and stuff, just showing that a lesson us guys can learn from right here, that how hard we need to work. Somebody that has a relationship with God ought to be seen as a worker, not as a lazy person, and he definitely comes across that way. God keeping his promises, which is providing for these great successes that we just read about. And then on the failing side, you got Laban's deceit that we talked about, where he sent, you know, Jacob worked 7 years, but then he's given Leah. Well, that wasn't the deal. So he was deceived greatly in that. And then this great sibling rivalry between Leah and Rachel that just seems to like really go off the deep end back and forth. And you can tell from their comments, it just wasn't producing heirs. It was to produce heirs over what the other sister had. So that's all I have. Used all my time. Wednesday we'll get into Genesis chapter 31 through 33:17. So if you want to read ahead, kind of see what we're going to be talking about, please do so. Thanks for your attention.